All right, I'm picking up here where I left off. This is sermon two, okay? And if you're just listening to this, I strongly suggest you go to my first sermon on Jewish communism and Bolshevism, which is the identical twin of Christianity. They're both one and the same program. I don't want to make these sermons too long because it gets to be tedious, and it's also difficult to upload. But here, I'm picking up on during the Stalin era, and Joseph Stalin was a Jew, part Jew, and his real name was Joseph Dugashvili, which in Georgian means son of a Jew. And I could go on, I'll be naming all the Jewish heads of state over there in the communist regime. Most of them, they're either Jewish or they're married to Jews, like Leonid Brezhnev. He was married to a Jewess. He was a tater. But I'm going to go on here. They would come, the Soviet, the NKVD, which is the predecessor of the KGB, would come around, I mean, unexpected, to and start banging down, knocking down the doors of innocent Russian citizens under the Soviet regime and arresting them. And the purpose for this was for slave labor. The Jew wants disposable human beings. And this is going on in China, red communist China right now. And make no joke, don't be fooled by this. Jews come in all races. There's Chinese Jews, and if you look beneath the surface and do enough research, most of the Communist Party over there at the highest levels are Chinese Jews. Shanghai, was a major city for, had a very large Chinese Jewish population, and there's an old expression, I don't know if a lot of people are old enough to remember this, but being Shanghai'd, that means being duped or swindled. Okay, the Jew comes in all races, and in the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, they make a statement that because they come in all different races, that's their power. They're a sub-race, and the Jews are a race. It is in their DNA. I'm not going to keep repeating this here, but go to Satan's Library or exposingchristianity.com, and it'll take you there. Satan's Library is located in the Black Sun link on the joyofsatan.org website under links. So you'd want to go to the Black Sun. There's a link right there, and you click on it. 666 Black Sun, and the Jews took this down, but we still have it on PDF, and you can check it out for yourself. I mean, somebody doesn't say, well, I'm a quarter Catholic, or I'm half Lutheran, or we have some Presbyterian blood in the family. Okay, the Jews are a race. You can draw a picture of a Jew, but you can't draw a picture of a Catholic or a Protestant, or even a Muslim for that matter. Now, I was getting back to hear how they tortured prisoners under the Soviet regime, and it was no different from how they tortured innocent people with the Christian Inquisition. Same tactics. It says, now this is from the book The Gulag Archipelago by Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and he survived the Gulag. He's a Russian citizen, and he survived the Gulag, but you have to go back to my first sermon. I'm not going to keep repeating this because I don't want to take too long on here. Prison begins with the box. In other words, what amounts to a closet or packing space. The human being who has just been taken from freedom, still in a state of inner turmoil, ready to explain, to argue, to struggle, is, when he first sets foot in prison, clapped into a box, which sometimes has a lamp and a place where he can sit down, but which sometimes is dark and unconstructed in such a way that he can only stand up, and even then he is squeezed against the door, and he is held there for several hours, or for half a day or a day. During those hours he knows absolutely nothing. Will he perhaps be confined there all his life? He has never in his life encountered anything like this, and he cannot guess at the outcome. Those first hours are passing, when everything inside him is still ablaze from the instilled storm in his heart. Some become despondent, and that's the time to subject them to their first interrogation. Others become angry, and that too is all to the good, for they may insult the interrogator right at the start or make a slip, and it will be all the easier to cook up their case. Now, this particular tactic, I'm interrupting here, really smacks of the Inquisition. When boxes were in short supply, they used to have another method. In the NKVD, Yelena Strutsenskaya was forced to remain seated on a stool in the corridor for 6 days in such a way that she did not lean against anything, did not sleep, did not fall off, and did not get up from it. 6 days, just try to sit that way for 6 hours. Then again, as a variation, the prisoner can be forced to sit on a tall chair of the kind used in laboratories so his feet do not touch the floor. They become numb in this position, and he is left sitting that way from 8 to 10 hours. Or else, during the interrogation itself, when the prisoner is out in plain view, he can be forced to sit in this way, as far forward as possible from the edge, move forward still, further still, of the chair, so that he is under painful pressure during the entire interrogation. He is not allowed to stir for several hours. Is that all? Yes, that's all. Just try it yourself. Depending on the local conditions, a divisional pit can be substituted for the box. The prisoner was forced into such a pit, 10 feet in depth, 6.5 feet in diameter, and beneath the open sky, rain or shine, this pit was for several days both his cell and his latrine. And 10.5 ounces of bread and water were lowered to him on a cord. Imagine yourself in this situation just after you've been arrested, when you're all in a boil. Either identical orders to all special branches of the Red Army, or else similarities of their situations in the field, led to broad use of this method. This is another one that is very, very similar to the Inquisition. It was used during the Inquisition. The accused could be compelled to stand on his knees, not in some figurative sense, but literally on his knees without sitting back on his heels and with his back upright. People could be compelled to kneel in the interrogator's office or in the corridor for 12 or even 24 or 48 hours. The interrogator himself could go home, sleep, amuse himself in one way or another, and this was an organized system. Watch is kept over on the kneeling prisoner, and the guards work in shifts. What kind of prisoner was the most vulnerable to such treatment? One already broken, already inclined to surrender. During all these tortures, which involved standing for 3, 4, and 5 days, they ordinarily deprived a person of water. The most natural thing of all is to combine the psychological and physical methods. It is also natural to combine all the preceding methods with sleeplessness, which they quite failed to appreciate in medieval times. They did not understand how narrow are the limits within the human being can preserve his personality intact. Sleeplessness, yes, combined with standing, thirst, bright light, terror, and the unknown. What other tortures are needed? Befogs the reason and undermines the will, and the human being ceases to be himself, to be his own I. As in Chekhov's, I want to sleep, but there is much easier, for there the girl could lie down and slip into lapses of consciousness, which even in just a minute would revive and refresh the brain. A person deprived of sleep acts half-consciously or altogether unconsciously so that his testimony cannot be held against him. They used to say, you are not truthful in your testimony, and therefore you will not be allowed to sleep. Sometimes as a refinement, instead of making the prisoner stand up, they made him sit down on a soft sofa, which made him want to sleep all the more. The jailer on duty sat next to him on the same sofa and kicked him every time his eyes began to shut. Here is how one victim, who had just sat out days in a box infested with bed bugs, describes his feeling after this torture. Chill from great loss of blood, irises of the eyes are dried out as if someone were holding a red-hot iron in front of them, tongue swollen from thirst and prickling from a hedgehog at the slightest movement, throat racked by spasms from swallowing. Sleeplessness was a great form of torture. It left no visible marks and could not provide grounds for complaint, even for an inspection, something unheard of anyway, were to strike on the morrow. The bed bug infested box has already been mentioned. In the dark closet made of wooden planks, there were hundreds, maybe even thousands of bed bugs, which had been allowed to multiply. The guards removed the prisoner's jacket or field shirt, and immediately the hungry bed bugs assaulted him, crawling onto him from the walls or falling off the ceiling. At first he waged war with them strenuously, crushing them on his body and on the walls, suffocated by their stink. But after several hours, he weakened and let them drink his blood without a murmur. This is another excerpt here, and it just gives you an idea. Millions upon millions of people were arrested under false allegations, and they were either shot right away, executed, tortured to death, or sent to Siberian labor camp, where most of them never came back. It was impossible to survive. A lot, there's just a small handfuls of people that survived. And like the Catholic Church, which is the same thing, they are working for communism, but they pretend publicly to be against it and fighting it. But under the table, they're working for it. The Jesuits, they want to establish serfdom. Now, this is during the Middle Ages, where the Catholic Church ruled. And Stalin, that five-year plan garbage, and Chairman Mao had his own, I'm going to go into that, same thing, same identical procedures, mass arresting people for slave labor, disposable human beings, working them to death and just getting rid of them. They want people to be ignorant, and Stalin actually established a serfdom over there, like during the Middle Ages, where people were just worked to death. There's no real entertainment anywhere, nothing. They're just slave labor. And I'm also going to get into how the Russian people lived. Okay, I'm not going to make these sermons too long here, but they arrested everybody they could think of, especially intellectuals like students, college students, people who are learned, because you cannot have a slave state with intelligent, knowledgeable people. It just doesn't work. You have to keep slaves ignorant. And I also want to mention here, and I have this, if you go to the Black Sun again, Satan's Library, that the Jews owned all of the slave ships and operated the African slave trade here to America, where they did the same very same thing, packed them like sardines. They did this in the Soviet Union too, in boxcars. Those are the real boxcars, where they went for weeks to Siberia, and a lot of them didn't make it there because of lack of food and water, no hygiene. I mean, just horrific. Getting back to the Gulag Archipelago, it says, among those arrested were our own real spies abroad. These were often the most dedicated Comintern workers and Czechists, and among them were many attractive women. They were called back to the motherland and arrested at the border. They were then confronted with their former Comintern chief, for example, Mirov Korona, who confirmed that he himself had been working for one of the foreign intelligence services, which meant that his subordinates were automatically guilty too, and the more dedicated they were, the worse it was for them. And I also want to add that Russian prisoners of war, okay, that actually they didn't have it too bad. The German POW camps under the Nazi regime were very humane. And I know an American who he was in a German POW camp, and he was treated very well there. He was even allowed to get letters, and he spoke highly of the Germans, and I remember him telling us this a long time ago, and he made it home. When the Russians got home, back to Russia, USSR, after the Second World War, most of them were sent to Siberia, because they were a threat to the communist state, because they had seen more of the world. And of course they were caught, and that was a big no-no. I mean, they were supposed to die. But basically they were sent to Siberia or executed, because they saw more outside of what the communist system tried to indoctrinate them with, and say that the rest of the world is hell and that Soviet Russia is paradise. And they keep indoctrinating people with these Jewish lies. Getting back to the book again, it says, Soviet employees of the Chinese Eastern Railroad, the KVZHD, were one and all arrested as Japanese spies, including their wives, children, and grandmothers. But we have to admit these arrests had already begun several years earlier. Koreans from the Far East were sent into exile in Kazakhstan, the first experiment in mass arrests on the basis of race. Leningrad Estonians were all arrested on the strength of having Estonian family ties and charged with being anti-communist Estonian spies. All Latvian riflemen and all Latvian Czechists were arrested. Yes, indeed, those very Latvians who had been the midwives of the revolution, who just a short while before had constituted the nucleus and the pride of the Cheka. And with them, taken even those communists of bourgeois Latvia that had been exchanged in 1921, and had been freed thereby from the dreadful Latvian prison terms of 2 and 3 years. In Leningrad, the Latvian department of the Herzen Institute, the House of Latvian Culture, the Estonian Club, the Latvian Technicum, and the Latvian and Estonian newspapers were all closed down. In the midst of the general to-do, the big solitaire game was finally wound up, and those not yet taken were raked in. There was no longer any reason to keep it a secret. The time had come to write the finis in the whole game. So now, the socialists were taken off to prison, and whole exiles, for example the Alpha exile and the Saratov exile, and they were all sentenced together and driven off in herds to the slaughterhouses of the archipelago. Nowhere was it specifically prescribed that more members of the intelligentsia should be arrested than of other groups, but just as the intelligentsia had never been overlooked in previous waves, it was not neglected in this one. A student's denunciation, and this combination of words, student and denunciation, had ceased to sound as outlandish. That a certain lecturer in a higher educational institution kept citing Lenin and Marx frequently, but not Stalin, it was all that was needed for the lecturer not to show up for lectures anymore. And what if he cited no one? All Leningrad Orientalists of the middle and younger generation were arrested. The entire staff of the Institute of the North, except for his NKVD informers, was arrested. They went even after school teachers. In Sverdlovsk, one case involved 30 secondary school teachers and the head of the provincial education department, Perel. One of the terrible accusations against them was that they had made arrangements to have a New Year's tree in order to burn down the school. And the club fell with the regularity of a pendulum on the heads of the engineers, who by this time were no longer bourgeois but a Soviet generation of engineers. Because of an irregularity in the geological strata, two mine tunnels with mine surveyor Nikolai Merkurievich Mikhov had calculated would meet failed to do so. He got Article 57-7, 20 years. Six geologists, the Kotovich group, were sentenced to 10 years under Article 58-7 for intentionally concealing reserves of tin ore in underground sites in anticipation of the arrival of the Germans. In other words, they failed to find the deposits. On the heels of the main waves followed an additional special wave of wives and the so-called CHS members of families. Among them were the wives of the important party leaders, and also in certain places, Leningrad, for example, the wives of all those who had been sentenced to 10 years without the right to correspond, in other words, those who were no longer among the living. The CHS, as a rule, all got 8 years. Well, that was still less than the disposed kulaks got, and their children did not go to the archipelago. Piles of victims, hills of victims, a frontal assault of the NKVD on the city. In one way, for example, G.P. Matveyeva not only saw her husband, but all three of her brothers arrested, all in different places. Of the four, three never returned. An electrician had a high-tension line break in his sector, 58.7, 20 years. A perm worker, Novikov, was accused of planning to blow up a Kama River bridge. In the same city of Perm, Yuzhakov was arrested during the day, and at night they came for his wife. They presented her with a list of names and demanded that she sign a confession that they had all met in her house at the Menshevik SR meeting. Of course they had not. They promised in return to let her out to be with her children. She signed, destroying all those listed, and of course she herself remained in prison. Nadezhda Yudenovich was arrested because of her family name. True, they established after 9 months that she was not related to the white general, and they let her out. A mere trifle during the time her mother had died of worry. In 1930, a small boy, three brothers, Pavel, Ivan, and Stefan Boruchko, came to the Soviet Union from Poland to live with their parents. Now, as young men, they were arrested for PSH, suspicion of espionage, and got 10 years. A streetcar motor woman of Krasnodar was returning on foot late at night from the car depot on the outskirts of the city. To her misfortune, she passed some people working to free a truck that had gotten stuck. It turned out to be full of corpses. Hands and legs stuck out from beneath the canvas. They wrote down her name, and the next day she was arrested. The interrogator asked her what she had seen. She told him truthfully, Darwinian selection, anti-Soviet agitation, 10 years. A plumber turned off the loudspeaker in his room every time the endless letters to Stalin were being read. His next-door neighbor denounced him. Where, oh, where is that neighbor today? He got SOE, socially dangerous element, 8 years. A half-literate stove maker used to enjoy writing his name in his free time. This raised his self-esteem. There was no blank paper around, so he wrote on newspapers. His friends found his newspaper in the sack in the communal toilet, with pen and ink flourishes across the countenance of the father and teacher. Anti-Soviet agitation. 10 years. Arrests rolled through the streets and apartment houses like an epidemic. Just as people transmit an epidemic infection from one another without knowing it, by such innocent means as a handshake, a breath, handling someone something, so too they passed on the infection of inevitable arrest by a handshake, by a breath, by a chance meeting on the street. For if you are destined to confess tomorrow that you organized an underground group to poison the city's water supply, and if today I shake hands with you on the street, that means I am too doomed. 7 years earlier, the city had watched while they massacred the countryside and considered it only natural. Now the countryside might have watched them massacre the city, but the countryside itself was dark for that and was still undergoing the finishing touches of its own slaughter. The surveyor, Saunin, got 15 years for cattle plague in the districts and for bad harvests. The entire leadership of the district was shot for the same reason. The secretary of a district party committee went into the fields to speed up the plowing, and an old peasant asked him whether he knew that for 7 years the collective farmers had received not one single ounce of grain in return for their labor days, and only straw, and very little of that. For his question, the peasant got ASA, anti-Soviet agitation, 10 years. I'm going to continue this in Sermon 3, and I strongly suggest you learn about this. I mean, I know a lot of people don't take the time to read. I will read to you. And I'm going to go into China, North Korea. Oh, it's just heinous. And it's all famine. Cannibalism has happened in all these countries. It's forced. I mean, it's just horrific. Nothing to eat, what they did to the Ukraine. And I'm going to go into the modern Russia, not Russia, but the USSR before they fell in the early 90s, 1991. I'm going to go into all of this and just give you an idea how these people lived and how they're looking for us to live. And this isn't some kind of a joke that you should take lightly or blow off or anything, because if you don't fight for freedom, if each one of us did not individually fight for freedom against this heinous plague that's going to destroy us all if it gets a chance to, we're all going to end up dead under the worst circumstances. So check out my sermon number 3 for continuation of this. Hail Satan.